Hi, hello, welcome. 欢迎大家 to another episode of Hot and Sour Soup for the Soul. In today's episode, we are talking about a career in the arts. Finding freelance work, illustrating for an international audience, art directing at tech giants. That's just the tip of the iceberg for today's guest, DQ Wu. DQ was born in China, Shenzhen to be specific, where she lived and studied into adulthood and made her way to the United States in 2012 to get after her Master's of Fine Arts at the Maryland Institute College of Art. Since then, she's built her career stateside in illustration and art direction, employed by tech giants like Airbnb and commissioned by clients like Louis Vuitton, Vogue, and the New York Times. She also recently scored a spot in Forbes 30 Under 30, class of 2020. We chat with DQ about hustling as a freelancer, grabbing the attention of art directors, cultivating creativity when we're running on empty, and navigating the nuances of creating content for international audiences. Catch you after the intro. Hey, DQ.
Hi, Adrian.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I listened to your old episodes. They're all very inspiring and very fun.
Thank you. Did you hear that, listener? Maybe it's time to go check the archives and listen to another episode after DQ's.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
So before we get started, to give you an overview of our episode, we are going to be traveling through your past, present, and future, zooming in on pivotal professional and personal events and how your multicultural perspective may have lent itself to those moments.
Yeah, sure.
Cool. So we're going to start off with your past. DQ, can you share with us a little bit about your background, your upbringing, and your relationship with your Asian heritage in the early years?
Yeah, so I originally from China. I'm born and raised in a city called Shenzhen. It's a very southern city in China near Hong Kong. I'm also Cantonese. I came to the US in 2012. I went to Maryland Institute College of Art to earn my master's degree in illustration. And since then, I've been living in the US been like 8 or 9 years now and working as an illustrator. And currently I work as a full-time illustrator in a tech company in San Francisco, but I also like based in LA. So I travel between like Los Angeles and San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was that experience for you moving to the US in 2012?
It's very strange because I never I never went abroad before 2012. This was my first time to go abroad to study. The most culture shock for me at the beginning is how different the school structure is. I was studying film editing in China, like undergrad school. Mostly my studies, the school studies all about like academic study. We have to study like math and science, sometimes like, I don't know, military theory study in China. It's kind of like a mandatory courses that you have to pass. But when I came to the US, the whole curriculum is different. It's more about like practicing and more about creativity. You have to find a way to show your unique perspective, adding your perspective on a lot of projects that you have to create it by yourself. So I would say that's quite different from the school in China. That takes me a lot of time to, you know, to know myself, to know what I want, what project I want, what I inspire.
So you studied film in a very theoretical way at a Chinese higher education institution, and then you came to the US to Maryland and studied illustration. So how did you make that transition from film into illustration?
Yeah, so I always love watching movies and just wanted to, you know, learn how to make movies. And so I got into this major in China, but I graduated in the college, just realized I'm not so interested in learning all the programs, the technical stuff. And also I'm not good at doing this. But I always wanted to learn drawing. I really, really loved drawing when I was a kid. And I was so interested in fashion, so I did a lot of fashion illustrations in my spare time after the study. And gradually, I just posted my art and my illustration on social media, like Weibo, and just got a lot of attention at that time. So some of the magazine editor, they tried to reach out to me and then wanted to hire me to do editorial illustration for those publications in China. And that's the way I think about, oh, I can make a living. Maybe I can make a living out of illustration and building up the career in illustration. So that's why I wanted to do more research about that. I wanted to learn, you know, how's the illustration look like being an illustrator career. So that's why I wanted to apply school in the US and then to learn more about that.
Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned to me previously that you would follow some American illustrators and draw influence from some of the themes that they would cover. So you were very good at translating illustration across borders, across geographic borders. Where do you think that comes from? And in what ways would you say you had to massage illustration in order to jive with the geography that you're designing for?
So at the beginning, when I get into the illustration, I don't have the background of like traditional art training, like figure drawing or color theory, because I didn't went to the art school. So the only way for me to learn illustration is to mimic the style that I like. My biggest inspiration is the British fashion illustrator called David Dunton. So I bought his book and then he do a lot of watercolor drawing, fashion illustrations. And I've been just like trying to practice the technique that he has and then to learn the skills that he has, just practice by my own. And then from him, I know that a lot of different other American fashion illustrators for his book that he was introducing. So I'm gradually just feel like, oh, there's a lot of different kind of style, not just like watercoloring or just like traditional drawing. There's actually has so many different style, like collage or like wood blocking, etching, it's a different kind of technique that you can learn. So that's the way like I want to learn illustration. And at that time, when I noticed fashion illustration still pretty popular in the Western culture, but not super popular in the Eastern. Usually my illustration inspired by different environment. Whenever I move to different cities, I like to incorporate different city elements into my illustration to show like different culture and different references. And sometimes I like to use illustration as a tool to celebrate my own culture because I'm so away from my family and I can't really see them very often and then I miss them very much. So a lot of time I'm just like using illustration as a tool to draw a lot of different cultural references, like for example, the festivals, holidays, to embrace my culture.
Yeah, you celebrate your culture through drawing. Maybe someone doesn't want to sit down and chat about Lunar New Year, but they might be interested in seeing an illustration about Lunar New Year with dragons and lanterns and all. It's almost like the gateway into a cultural conversation.
Yeah, totally.
So backtracking, when you were talking about illustrating for fashion editorials, was there anything that surprised you when you first started doing those commissions?
It's not much things surprised me, but I think there's a lot of trending was changing this year, this over like 5 or 10 years before. People like to join very skinny models, super skinny, long legs. That's just kind of like a dominating aesthetics for fashion industry. A lot of people wanted to draw like white models too. But I feel like recent years, this kind of changing. A lot of people tend to draw different figures, and including different body types, including different skin tones.
So you have done a lot of commissions, also have worked as an art director, commissioning illustrators to work freelance for you. So for those who are in the freelance industry, what advice do you have to land gigs and to be competitive in such a hyper-competitive landscape?
Yeah, so I know that a lot of illustrators have been reaching out to me and sending out their portfolios. A lot of times I would just collect all the portfolio that I receive. If I feel like, oh, this is a good style, it's going to fit in the brand or fit in our company, I would put it in the library. I think every art director has their own library. like they have a database, they're trying to collect all the illustrator they like and categorize them into different tag. For example, their genders, a female or male artist, where they come from, what's the style, how they use the color, what they like to draw, like objects, animals, or characters. They would just categorize different tag for this artist and become a database library. Whenever has a draw comes in, they were just searching the specific tag to find the artist. This is a good way to, you know, sending out the emails and then showing the portfolio to different art directors. And a lot of times you can find art directors' contact info through different magazines, different publications. And a lot of artists, they also ask me the question, like, how do you get the gigs? How do you get the jobs? How do you, you know, stay in the industry? A lot of freelance artists, they have a huge gap and don't receive any jobs. They would feel like very depressed and they would just give up. My advice, like, never give up on the illustration career that you want. Because I've been there, like, I don't have job for a long time, like a couple months, and even just a year. I don't feel like my career going anywhere, but I never trying to give up this path. I always want to find ways to be more creative, you know, to improve my skill, also to improve my style, and just doing some like self-initiated project and share with other people. And eventually we'll get some like other jobs or exhibit or other like fun projects to work on.
Yeah. You were saying earlier that there were times where you wanted to give up too, when there were a few dry months in terms of commissions. How do you feel that you've been able to stay resilient? And also, how have you kept your creativity at the level that it is? Many people say that creativity is a muscle. Some people claim that, you know, their right brain may be less developed than their left brain, so they're just not creative people. But how do you see that statement? And if someone is wanting to up their creative ability, what exercises do you recommend?
Yeah, as a freelance artist, I think it's really, really hard to balance the financial and also the mentally prepared, because usually it's really hard to find job. Sometimes if I don't have jobs, I have a huge gap that I can't find any inspiration and I don't get any gigs. I usually just like create my own project. For example, I have a cat and love my cat. So I usually create like my cat as the main character, the story around her, the illustrations around her. I would do some like stationary design, like a cat has a birthday card or something like that. That's my own project. That only belongs to me and not belong to anyone. Especially you don't have a client, you have more freedom to do any work you like. I think that's a really good opportunity to give yourself a little bit break between the jobs, and then you can just do whatever you like, find your favorite objects, subjects to draw. So that's one of the advice. Another advice is don't be always working. Sometimes you need a break to do other things that you like. A lot of artists, they just like keep drawing, keep wanting to improve, to experiment, to help themselves to get inside the industry. But I feel like a lot of times you have to give yourself a break. Like if you just feel like you don't inspire to draw, just don't draw. Just give a break to go to nature, to travel, to hiking, or do other stuff. Like I like cooking, I will cooking, do some gardening. I feel that way can improve the creativity.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you're low on commission work, one is to commission yourself, do whatever it is that you want to be covering. I have heard this saying recently where some artists say, you know, if you take their money, you take their SHIT. This podcast is non-expletive, but you know what that means. So yeah, when you aren't taking their money, you also don't have to take their SHIT, which can be empowering at times. And then the second point you mentioned is to give yourself a little bit of breathing room to get creative. Sometimes when you are trying to force yourself into it, it does exactly the opposite.
Yes. Yes. That's just my personal experience. I believe there's many, many ways to get yourself creative, but I feel like this is the two ways that make me like really, really feel creative and feel productive.
Yeah. Are there any exercises that you use to jumpstart your creativity? Is there kind of like a framework that you work through?
So sometimes I like to create my own texture. Like I like to use different objects, for example, pens, or just like wood board or anything like rocks that I can find from my garden, and just like trying to do different texture. And those texture, I can scan it inside my computer and make them into a digital texture and digital brushes. And at the time, like I can just experiment different textures inside my illustrations. Sometimes I find a way, oh, this is great. This is a good brushes. This is a good brush texture that I can use in the future. I like to collect them, you know, just finding different things and trying to find different texture, different brush, and create it into my own library and just play with it. That's one of the way that I like to do as an exercise, the illustration exercise.
Yeah.
There's a lot of resources on the internet, website like Skillshare.com or Adobe Live Drawing. I like to see other people drawing, how they think about a concept, how they're sketching a concept for illustration assignments. Those are really, really helpful for me, not just being locked down in one room doing my own stuff.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I like what you say too about customizing your own toolkit. I think oftentimes when people think about creating, they think about the execution, but you're recommending that maybe you can even take it on a more rudimentary level where before you even get to creating, like create the tools that you are going to use to create, and that allows you to differentiate as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think tools definitely is a way to help you to get a more creative. I mean, tools, it's not like a major thing to get you to draw, but it does help you a lot of different ways to inspire to draw different things, especially when you come into the subject that you wanted to present. For example, you wanted to present like the clouds, you want to draw the kind of very soft cloud texture, and then a lot of time you just find your own texture, and then you find out, oh, this is the right texture to draw the clouds, and then suddenly you just got inspired from your own toolkit. So I think this is a really good like exercise.
Yeah, that's some really great advice for illustrators and those who are looking to get commission and find more work. So thank you. I want to zoom out and move into your time as an art director. So as an art director, you also have to do the management side of illustration, not just the execution. So on the management side, what have you learned as an art director for getting buy-in for ideas and selling campaigns and creative themes to upper management?
Yeah. So being an art director, I didn't think about it so difficult. I thought just like, oh, if I know the drawing, if I know how to, you know, pick illustrator, if I know how to art direct it, that's already enough for being an art director. But I was wrong. So I was working the company, tech company as art director. A lot of times, I would say 90% of times is to communicate with the stakeholders or communicate with different clients and to know what they need. Sometimes the stakeholders or the clients, they don't know what they need. There's a lot of times like when the clients, they like the direction, the one of the direction the illustrator present, but if I don't think that's a good direction to show, you know, show into the product, I also need to communicate with them, like, what's the best outcome, I think, through this concept. I think just like a lot of communication between the stakeholders and then and the clients is a key part for our direction. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are there any techniques that have served you well across clients in understanding what they want, but also guiding them in the direction that you feel is best?
Yeah. So a lot of times, as I mentioned, like the clients, stakeholders, they don't know what they want. Sometimes they were saying the reason, like why they don't like the illustration, but sometimes they just can't even find a way to say it. Then I have to show them like different example, different other good example or like bad example, or I would make my suggestion to them, like, oh, do you mean you want the composition like broader? Do you mean you want to see more of the characters? You know, just asking specific question and then to let them to decide, oh, this is what they want. Because a lot of times just like they're not artists, they're not illustrator, they're not art director or any like creative directors. They need someone has the art perspective to lead them to get to what they want. So that's one of the strategy that I have. And then I think good communication also is a good, it's important key, because you're not fighting with them. They're not your enemy. They're your partners. And so we have to tell each other, we have to, you know, tell each other like, ultimately, we want a good product for the company. Our goal is the same. So we want to work together to achieve this goal. And yeah, just trying to let them know we're not fighting. We're not like trying to argue with this. We wanted to present the ultimately the good products to our company.
Yeah, it's not combative, it's collaborative. Nice. So during your work as an art director, were there any moments in which your work challenged parts of your Asian heritage, and how did you work through those moments?
Yeah, I would say in my personal life, the biggest challenging I was living in the US, it's so far away from my family. I think Chinese culture traditionally they celebrate family all together, like very much. They value the close relationship between the family members. My grandparents living like 2 hours away from my parents' home, like driving 2 hours. So we visit them, used to visit them like almost like twice a month, or like any holidays, we would just visit them and then just like celebrate together and share a meal together. This is one of the things that really challenged me because I was so far away from them, and my parents, like, they only see me like one or two times a year. And also my grandparents, they're super old. My granddad's like 106 year old. And my grandma,
oh my gosh, 83. We got to get him on the podcast. The fountain of youth, he's found it.
Yeah. So yeah, so this has been one of the challenge, like, oh, they're so old and I can celebrate a lot of different holidays and festivals with them, or even just like visiting them less and less over years. So I feel like this is one of the challenging part in my life, even though like I'm trying to call them like every day, but still this kind of, homesick, it's been like super frustrating, especially in the pandemic too.
And it sounds like you've worked through your homesickness and tried to bridge that geographic gap through illustration by drawing a lot of Chinese themes and incorporating that into your artwork.
Yeah. So I intended to keep a really good relationship with my clients in China. I wanted to build up the relationship across like China and the US. So a lot of projects I'm working for the China clients, there's a lot of opportunities that I can go to China and then to work with them, and some exhibitions I can just visit China, and then that make a lot of opportunities that I can just visit my family back when I was in China working. So that's one of the things, like I always want to keep relationship and building on my networking in China too.
That's such a unique catalyst to build your portfolio of Chinese clients to gain access to those opportunities to travel internationally and visit your family more often.
Yeah, exactly.
While not breaking the bank.
Yes.
So we've talked through your past and your present now. I'd love to move to your future. And, you know, you mentioned earlier how diversity and inclusion are a big part of illustration for individual illustrators, but also brands moving forward. What have you been doing as an art director, as a individual illustrator, to make sure that this momentum continues?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, I was working in a travel-based tech company in San Francisco. We did a lot of like localization illustrations for different cities and different countries. So we want to intentionally hire local illustrators and to represent the cultures, actually from the culture. So that's one of the things I want to make sure this is correct. This is the right way to do it. We are not hiring a white artist to draw like something in Thailand or something in Singapore. We wanted to do it right. The right thing. Another thing that I learned is working in the tech company in recent years, the trending was like moving in a good way, like intended to show and represent people in illustrations with the product, also trying to avoid stereotype. One of the illustrations I recently working on, it was like some illustration to show two persons along with some like data post. And then one of the illustrator is presenting the data, another illustrator just listening. So like concept like this is super straightforward, but I want to intend it to draw, like, it's not like the men's talking, the women's listening, this kind of stereotype, like gender stereotype. We wanted to flip that. And also, like, the recent tech illustration trend has to, like, showing more diverse, not just showing different race, but also showing, like, different genders, different cultural relevance, different body types, different religious, or, like, different, it's just trying to show, like, the whole world of people, different communities. Mm-hmm. So that's the way, like, we wanted to show more diverse characters inside the illustration and being, like, more inclusive. A lot of times, like, the company trying to draw some concepts, very abstract concept, but we have to make sure this is internationalized, that people can recognize. For example, I used to work in a concept about trust. So we have to draw, like, different abstract concept of trust. A lot of people just think about using, like, gesture, using different kind of posture to showing the trust. But we also have to consult the legal team, also consult the localization team. Does this translate it globally? Does the audience at Middle East can recognize this concept? The Asian audience can recognize this concept. So we have to do this kind of consulting before, like, get launched inside the product.
All the more important, too, to have people with a range of experience in the room when discussing what trust looks like around the world. When you say that, it reminds me of the peace sign, you know, how it was really popular back in, I want to say 2012. So when you first came to the US to do, like, a duck face and then do the backhand peace sign, as in, like, peace out. But that hand gesture in the UK means F you. So that would be a little bit problematic if you're trying to show teenagers, like, hanging out, taking a selfie, and then people in the UK are like, oh, how profane.
Yeah, I know. This is so hard. Like, a lot of culture are so differences. A lot of gesture in your culture is positive, but in another culture is totally negative. And something that I learned along the art direction way, we intend to avoid to show the alcohol, because alcohol is a way, maybe in American culture, is like celebrating, and, you know, people like to drink when they celebrate in the holidays or parties. But in certain cultures, alcohol is kind of, it's insult. They don't want to see that. They don't want to see that inside art, inside illustration. So there's a lot of just, like, different cultural perspective that we have to, you know, be very cautious and try to avoid to show, like, offensive stuff.
Mm-hmm. What is one motto that you're taking with you over these next 12 months as you embark on this journey to really making sure that all this talk about diversity and inclusion actually walks the walk?
Yeah, so I love the artist. My favorite American artist is George O'Keefe. And she once said, it's not enough to be nice in life, you got to have nerve. So I like this motto, and it's been inspiring me. Like, I want to say to a lot of artists that don't ever give up what you like, keep doing what you wanted to do. Just keep working on it, even though sometimes you will fail, but just don't give up, just keep working on the things that you love.
That's such a beautiful quote.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your experience in illustration and as an art director.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for inviting me to this podcast too. I have a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Thanks, Deku.
And that is all for this episode. Thank you for tuning in. If you are hungry for more Hot and Sour Soup for the Soul, there are 10 other episodes, so feel free to dig in. And if you are more of a tactile person like myself, I invite you to check us out at thebabebrigade.com, where you will find the physical manifestation of this season mission to expand upon traditional representations of success, fulfillment, and leadership in today's America. Okay, that's all from me. We'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, goodbye. Zaijian. Toodaloo. We'll be right back.